a Christmas celebration in the elementary school when we lived on 67th Street. And I remember that I must have been in a play with a speech. I am a maid of the Revolutionary War days. I had a costume, the whole bit. And after everything, and caroling all day long in the school, it was all geared in the direction of the celebration of Christmas. And my parents never said to me, don't. I mean, they had a very, very overriding awe and respect for the school. Mm-hmm. And one thing I'll tell you, the way I was raised is what we should do again. Mm-hmm. That the teacher was always right, mm-hmm. even when she was wrong. Mm-hmm. And if the greatest punishment in our family is if the parents had to be called to school, that was a fate worse than death. Mm-hmm. You just didn't live down that shame, and you got punished at home for it before the parent even went to school to find out. That my mother and father took the position, and mostly my mother. My father was a very quiet, gentle man. He had strong opinions, but they only came out rarely. And I'll tell you another interesting thing about my father. My father was an avid reader. And because we're in the newspaper business, he used to read the Times and the Tribune and the News and the Mirror. Then he would read the foreword to check on the authenticity of everything else. That's the way it went. But they had a great belief that the teacher was someone to be revered, and the teacher was right. And if you had a fight with a child, you got punished because you were always wrong. And they perhaps it was overbearing on the one side, but I don't think it hurt one little bit. Mm-hmm. But that day of the Christmas celebration, I still remember. I was the only Jewish child, as I told you. The teacher separated me out. Everybody got a little gift. But I was separated out. And after everybody left, she had me wait. She gave me a little gilt metal basket filled with candy and a lovely butterfly on it. But it was a different gift than the others and separate from the others.
How did it make you feel? It stood out in memory.
I was very flattered by mm-hmm. it. And it mm-hmm. stayed with me all mm-hmm. these years. Mm-hmm. That she had done that. I don't know. It's hard to assess what her motive was, but I have a hunch it was a nice one. That for some reason she was separating me out from mm-hmm. the Christian children, mm-hmm. but didn't want me to feel left out. Mm-hmm.
But she was not Jewish.
No.
She was respecting your Jewish.
Yes, right, uh-huh. right. And of course, in those years, observant families in those years didn't observe Hanukkah the way we do now because it wasn't considered a major holiday, and they didn't observe it in the same way. The observance I remember is there would be a dreidel and patayalakis and, you know, things of that sort, but not the gift-giving thing that it is today. It's much different today.
Did you have any problems in school because you were approximately 2 years younger than the other kids in the class?
I didn't until I moved to Jamaica. When I moved to Jamaica, I was 11, I believe, yeah. And what they did, they skipped me a grade on top of it.
So you were 3 years ahead.
And I want to tell you that I was in trouble. That's mm-hmm. when I ran into trouble, because what happened was I ran into certain subject matter where I had missed complete mm-hmm. portions of learning. Mm-hmm. And that was the first and only experience I had in my school life where they asked for someone to come from home. I remember my sister went, because here I was a good student, but I was beginning to fail. Mm-hmm. But I made it all right somehow. And by the time I was in the very last grade in New York, that would be 8B. That's the end of the eighth grade. I had straightened out, and I graduated at age 12. In high school, I began tiny little, not a lot, but certain social problems. For example, in those years, I was wearing anklets. And when I found out I had to wear stockings to high school, I was very unhappy, and I had a whole hassle at home over it. And social things, contacts with boys and so on and so forth, not to the degree where I consider it, as I look back, a major thing, but enough to remember that it was difficult because everybody was older. Mm-hmm. But of course, I shouldn't say everybody was. In those years, they did skip kids. See, there were other kids who were in the same category. Actually, my own feeling educationally is that it hurts you more later. When I was in teacher's college and studying arithmetic and arithmetic methods of teaching, I ran into problems. I remember running into a problem that had to do with diagramming in grammar in English. I had never been taught it. I apparently missed it along the way, and I had to start all over again. Mm-hmm. There were parts of history. I had gaps. Mm-hmm. Because teaching then isn't like now. When my Steve talks about history, it's like a book. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have the feeling that he worked at it. Mm-hmm. But in my day, depending on the teacher you had, you really worked at it because you got a series of dates. I can still rattle off all the presidents and all the dates and so forth.
1066.
But nothing connects. Uh-huh. There's no history that is a story, which is what it should be.
Mm-hmm. Did your were your parents at all involved politically in any?
My father was a socialist. Everybody was in those days. My mother was not involved at all.
What did his being a socialist involve? Did he go to meetings or?
I don't remember that. I just remember his opinions were in that. See, he read a lot, so he had a lot of opinions in that direction, and he loved to talk about these things. But politically, we were... one thing that occurred was, of course, being in the newspaper business, they had contact with people, and they knew everybody who was anybody... that was Jewish on the East Side in those years, if there was a judge or a lawyer and so forth, they'd know them, mm-hmm. and usually by a first name. Mm-hmm. But other than that, no.
Were you or your brother and sister interested in that?
None of us has ever been involved politically.
What was the major party at that time? What did the Jews belong to? Oh, you said your father was socialist, wasn't a Democrat or Republican.
Many of the Jewish people, particularly the working people, if not most, I think I can safely say most, were socialists. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. In other words, it had to do with labor and their work and their needs at the time.
Were there people running for office?
Yes. But from that point on, we were Democrat. Mm-hmm. There was the Democratic trend all the way through the family, almost, I would say, entirely. I have always been an independent as I got older. Mm-hmm. The thought of, first of all, I can remember one of the only things that my husband and I differed on in the first year of our marriage. I was 21, it was going to be my first vote. Mm-hmm. And he very casually was talking to me about the vote, and I resented the fact, I made it very plain, that I didn't need anybody's assistance in deciding, you know, how to vote. It was funny from that time on. Now I'll ask him, and he'll say, I'm not telling you.
Aside from public transportation, what other contrasts were there between your home and Pittsburgh when you came to visit?
I found Pittsburgh to be a whole different world. I loved it. I missed home, you know. You know, now I look back and I think, you know, isn't it wonderful to be in love and naive? It never occurred to me that I was leaving home. It never occurred to me I'm going to miss everybody. I just was in love and happy and I was going. And I was lonely, believe me. But I loved Pittsburgh from the start. I had the advantage of marrying a Pittsburgh man. Mm-hmm. And so he had many friends, because Nate's been involved ever since he's a kid with the Hillary Club and the Y and the Ikes, and he's been a club leader. And so he had lots of friends. And, of course, I have family here. But you must remember that the family was in no different category than these friends, because I didn't know the family any better here than I knew the friends. Mm-hmm. And I found Pittsburgh very different. I found a higher standard of living among average people than I had found in New York. And that I experienced when I go to the dress shops here. It seemed to me that even the average person was spending much more money to buy a dress, for example, than I had found in the same group of people in New York. I found shopping exceedingly difficult. because this is a department store town, and I had never shopped department stores. I found you had class distinctions, because if you went to Squirrel Hill to buy a dress, and you walked into, now let's see, who was there, that Miles. If they didn't recognize you as one of their regulars, you sat there and you cooled your heels for an indefinite period of time, because each sales girl had her regulars. And I broke the ice by telling them bluntly, how in heaven's name do you develop a clientele? When someone walks in, you don't even make an attempt to make her a customer. I went through this bit the minute people would hear that I'm from New York. After all, I was a very naive, unsophisticated kid. I'd go in to buy a hat, and they'd say, this is a Mr. John, and I'd say, is that good? and later on, you know, I'd continue to say, is that good, but more sarcastically. Because they would tell me what, they'd say, oh, you're buying a dress, you have to buy black. This is June, July, you have to buy black. Everyone in New York is buying black, wearing black. And I'd say, who told you that? I never saw anybody wearing black in June and July in New York. Mm-hmm. Yes. You go down Fifth Avenue, I'd say, those aren't New Yorkers, those are the people from Pittsburgh visiting. Mm-hmm. But I had great difficulty with that initially. It was adapting to a whole new pattern. It's a different kind of city.
Did you find it different politically? With it, I would imagine there were fewer socialists in the Jewish community.
Oh, honey, by that time, remember, when I speak socialist, I'm talking way back to when I was a child. I grew up, we were Democrats. Oh, I remember the campaign for Alfred E. Smith. That's where in school you were so involved. Uh-huh. And the socialist was way back when I was a tiny little girl. Oh. That was the thing then.
But when you started visiting your grandparents here, that was already...
No, that was an old, old thing by then. No, you found most of the Jewish community... I shouldn't say that about Pittsburgh. The Pittsburgh family that I came to visit was different than the New York family. They were the wealthier people. My family here, many of them, my mother's stepbrothers, my mother's sisters, etc., were, for the most part, very comfortable.
Excuse me, I missed a step. Did you come to Pittsburgh when you got married or before you got
before.
Married?
I came here with my mother when I was 17.
Yeah.
To visit my grandma, and this cousin had the party for me, and I met my husband.
Yeah.
We were engaged when I was 20, married when I was 21. Mm-hmm. That's when I came here immediately to live.
Oh, I see. Well, you became engaged.
Right. I came here in 19, we were married in 1935. Mm-hmm. That's when I came here to live as a bride. And that, too, was an experience because we went to look for apartments, and I found that Pittsburgh was an interesting city. You could find all kinds of things beneath your means. Mm-hmm. Remember, this was still part of the Depression. Mm-hmm. We weren't out of it. You could find an awful lot above your means. It was very hard to find any place. Mm-hmm. We lived in a little apartment on Maryland Avenue, and frankly, it didn't make a particle of difference to me. I knew one thing. I didn't want to go the Pittsburgh route. Everybody we knew that was married was living on the third floor of somebody's house. Mm-hmm. That was the pattern, you know, when you were starting out. I'd never seen such a thing. Mm-hmm. And I would be asked, do you have a private bath or semi-private? And all I said, Nate and I looked for a week and couldn't find anything. I went home, I said, I don't care what you find or where it is. Just make sure it's our apartment, our own private apartment. I didn't know if anything else. I found this city to be a good 10 years behind New York. For example, we saw places that weren't heated, and even in tenements in New York, they were heated, things like that. So we had this little apartment for about a year on Maryland Avenue.
What section is Maryland?
Shady Side.
Oh.
And charming.
Yeah, but I don't know. The part we were at was kind of between the best and the worst. I don't know.
Yeah.
All I know, it was a nice apartment. The thing that threw me is that I felt that people were reacting to where you live or how you live, and I had no I didn't know if I was living in a good neighborhood, a bad neighborhood. I didn't know. I didn't know any part of Pittsburgh. Mm-hmm. I knew we were comfortable in this little apartment, and I knew that it was temporary. And about a little over a year after we moved into the apartment, we bought a duplex on Beachwood Boulevard and moved there. But that was a very interesting sidelight, how people who live there have opinions about where you were, and they forget that the newcomer has... I had no reaction. Uh-huh. People would say, is it a nice place? I thought it was nice. I didn't know. Uh-huh. I had no idea.
And you were immediately busy. You did say that your husband had so many friends. Yeah, and he had so that you immediately were...
I had contacts, and so it made it nice. It was difficult because the city was new. I remember I used to go into town, and I would never leave Fifth Avenue. I could down one side of Fifth Avenue and up the other because I didn't know my way around. Mm-hmm. And it was lonely. Mm-hmm. It was lonely in the sense that I had... I didn't feel the overriding loneliness, frankly, until my children were born. That's
really?
When I began to... Yeah, because then you begin to realize... No grandma and grandpa here, no aunts and uncles here. Although my husband has one brother and one sister. Mm-hmm. But my immediate family, you know, just weren't here. That's when you begin to feel it. You know, when you're young and in love and you're busy running around, you don't have time to sense that. I knew I missed people. Mm-hmm. But then I'm an avid writer. Mm-hmm. I wrote home almost every day, all the years my mother was alive, even if it was only a line or two. Because my mother didn't read, but she knew when she saw my letter coming in. Mm-hmm. And if a letter didn't come, she'd say to my sister, somebody's sick, either Lily's sick or Nate or the children. Mm-hmm. And she knew, and once I developed the habit as Mama got older, I kept it up. And even now, my sister and I will write back and forth 3 and 4 times a week.
Really?
I don't like to, I call, but I, even with the children, I get lonely after I talk to them. I'm all right as long as we're writing back and forth. But once I'm on the line with them and hear their voices, then it takes me a little while. I feel a sense of they're not here. You know. So letters to me are like conversation. I'm a queer. I love to write letters, and I write. I write a lot. It's my way of talking to a friend. And I still write to my maid of honor, my girlfriend, my Italian girlfriend.
When you talked about your writing to your mother, and your mother didn't...
I would write to my sister, and she would
read
the letters
to my mother.
Oh, and
she would write back, because it wasn't a one-way...
Yeah, no.
One-way, street.
No, no, we wrote back and forth, and as I say, as my mother got older, it was almost a lifeline in the sense that it gave my sister more peace of mind, because when my mother knew the letters were coming, then she felt everything was all right here.
Yes.
Was your mother living with your sister?
With my sister. My mother and father moved in with my... they had been living together before. See, that was one of the depression things that occurred. At the height of the depression, my brother-in-law, who was a dental mechanic and had his own lab, his business literally fell apart, and he became ill. And they had one child, and she became quite ill. And my mother insisted that it would be easier on her rather than running back and forth and my dad running back and forth, that they lived together. And they just never separated. And mostly I can say that it was my parents' attachment to my niece, their grandchild. They could never... You couldn't even discuss their being apart. And so then when my father passed away, my mother remained with my sister and her husband. They now, they live further out, but all those years they lived in Jamaica.
You were talking about illness. What was the medical care like as a child? Did you have a feeling that it was adequate? Were there any problems?
I don't remember. We were, thank God, a very well family. You know, in the last year of my mother's life, we had her institutionalized in an old age home.
How old was she?
She was, she admitted to 85. She was older than that. But, you know, they didn't believe her health record. After my sister told them, they double-checked it themselves. They thought my sister was lying or didn't know. My mother had never been in a hospital in her life and had never had a major illness.
You were all born at home, I guess.
Yeah. Now, she was supposed to have me in the hospital, but never made it. There was a blizzard. I was born on March 1st, 1914. There was a terrible blizzard. And my father was out looking for the doctor to bring him home because, you know, there was no way of getting her there. But she had never been in the hospital. And my father, when he passed away, was in the hospital, and we sometimes think his death was hastened by the fact that he was in a hospital. He was scared to death.
He was
never been in the hospital.
He was a younger man. He was incredibly young when he died.
No, he wasn't that. Well, he's young by today's standards. He had to be at least 70 at the time. See, we don't have accurate records. Remember, mm-hmm. when they came from Russia, mm-hmm. they didn't know their actual. Yeah. They knew. Or my mother used to say my birthday's around comic at the mm-hmm. time. They never had any mm-hmm. accurate dates, and it's very sad because mm-hmm. there were no records mm-hmm. kept, and we can only estimate.
But there were things like midwives, nurses.
Yes, my mother had someone in the house at the time I was born, and she mm-hmm. took care of her, mm-hmm. took care of the house. And another thing I remember, you know, it's interesting as you look back how poor the families were, and yet certain things, just like my parents having a piano.
Mm-hmm. Were you given piano lessons, or your mother?
My sister was quite an accomplished pianist. My brother wouldn't take any kind of musical mm-hmm. lessons because he just revolted. He was a redhead and he had a temper. And I was given piano lessons, but they were stopped because of the times, you know. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting. I remember my mother used to have a lovely old Hungarian lady. I remember they're telling me that the time of my brother's bar mitzvah on the fifth floor of one of these tenement yeah. buildings, that the neighbor opened up her apartment and our apartment was open, and they set tables for the lunch after the bar mitzvah. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And this old Hungarian lady, I can vaguely remember, she used to come to help. Uh-huh. She'd make these Hungarian pastries uh-huh. and so forth. And that they were... There were certain things that were overriding, mm-hmm. and you had to find money, I guess, mm-hmm. for that. That must have been mm-hmm. their thinking. Mm-hmm. Because as I look back, I don't know how they did it.
Mm-hmm. Was Nathan finished with his... He had passed the bar and everything?
Nate was already practicing law. He was practicing law when I met him. Nate is 7 years older than me. And the first night when I met him, he told me he was a lawyer. You know, I was 17. I thought, gee, that's a great line. That's a new one. I didn't believe it. And he found me by tracking me down the next day. You see, there's a million Solos here. And all he knew was that my name was Solo, and I was staying with one of my relatives. When he got to the fourth relative, he found me.
He really wanted to find you.
Was his childhood much different from yours?
Yes. Totally different. Because his father was gone from the family when he was very, very young. And his mother worked so hard in a little business raising three children. And it had to be a deprived childhood in the sense of a single parent and the hardships of the time, a mother involved in a business and so forth. So it was different.
What section of the city did they live in?
Down on, everybody comes from where? Penn Avenue.
Okay.
As I understand it, that's where everybody
yes.
comes from. Pittsburgh is Penn Avenue.
Yes.
Yeah. See, you're
yeah.
too young to go
yeah,
there.
You're too young.
When Nate's contemporaries get together. You know what I found the most fascinating thing about Pittsburgh? Of everything I've told you, this is the only city I've ever seen. It's not a small city, and it's a large Jewish community. You bring a group of people into the room and give them 20 minutes. They're either related or they went to school together or with somebody's brother.
Yes.
And when that was one of the things that used to bother me. We'd go out and I'd be the only one with no background.
Uh-huh.
Nobody knew anybody, you know, uh-huh. nobody knew anything about me.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, one of the other interesting things was in the early years, we happened to have a number of friends who had come in from New York to work for the Internal Revenue Department.
Mm-hmm.
And very often we'd get together and then Nate would be out. He'd be the only Pittsburgher in the crowd. And then the discussions would be great. And I would always end up trying to convince the other people, particularly those who are unhappy here, what a wonderful city it is, and that they'd stay, they'd learn to love it, which was true.
Mm-hmm.
But those who stayed learned to love it and didn't want to leave. But I found Pittsburgh to be special. It really is. It's not a small town, and yet living is more like a small town. It's a much slower pace than other cities I've been in. There's still some very lovely amenities that you find here that you don't find in other major cities at all. If you've ever been any place visiting anybody in New York City and you try to get a cab, you'll find out how nice Pittsburgh is, where you pick up the telephone and call for a cab. It's great.
I'm sorry. You met him when you were 17 visiting here. Did you see him frequently after that?
We corresponded a great deal. I came back when I was 18. I was here for a month the first time, and after I met him, we dated a great deal all the time I was here. I was here for a month, came back again the next summer. I was here for a month, and we dated then, and we kept corresponding. And eventually, right after Nate's mother passed away, I came to Pittsburgh, and we were engaged. He came to New York after that, not too long after that, and we were engaged. And within a year, we were married.
In New York.
Mm-hmm. And you were married
at home. At home, in the height of the Depression.
Was the Hungarian lady there?
She was gone by then, and things were much worse then. Because that was really the height of the Depression.
Yes.
And I was one of the rare people getting married. You know, among
what
all...
What year was that?
1935. Among all my cousins and among all my girlfriends, mm-hmm. I was the first one to get married. Mm-hmm. I really was moving into a... When it came to talking about furnishing and different things, the only one I could talk to was my sister, who was 10 years older than I, because there was, remember, in the Jewish community, all over, I'm sure, but particularly in the Jewish community, there was a great big gap there. There were a lot of young men and women left over that never married from that period. I have lots of cousins, girls and boys, who never married. How could they?
My dad's two brothers.
Sure, because they couldn't. They had nothing. You didn't attempt to date in those years, because if you had any compassion at all or understanding, I knew the boys I went to college with didn't have any more money than I did. I used to get a quarter a day, mm-hmm. and not on weekends. Mm-hmm. And the boys were in the same position. It isn't as though they could get a part-time job or anything. Mm-hmm. And then for the boys... some of the boys, I was very close to the fellows that I went to college with. There were a whole group of us, and I was interested in the boys' basketball team. There were a whole gang of boys from Brooklyn on the team, and they used to come to our house, and they used to like my mother to make hamburgers.
Mm-hmm.
They'd come to our house before a game, and then I would go to the game because it was played in Jamaica, and they were from Brooklyn. Mm-hmm. And many of them had childhood sweethearts. At that college age, they were already going steadily with these girls. Mm-hmm. They had no way to think of getting married. And most of them were lost to the teaching profession. There were a couple that stayed with it. Everybody else drifted away. And in those interim years, they did everything. Mm-hmm. One of the fellows that was so close to it, I'm still in touch with those that are still around, mm-hmm. that group of us mm-hmm. that went to college together. And... one of them, he refereed basketball games. He sold shoes, I remember. He did everything. He had married by that time. And it was very hard. You know, they were starting to raise a family. He was one of the very few that stayed with teaching and went on to become a principal. Marvelous teacher. Just he was born to that particular profession. But those were very, very rough years, because you may have had the desire to be almost anything. What difference did it make?
But you sounded like you enjoyed it, even though you know,
college.
Your friendships. Even though life was
our
was
college
boring,
was delightful, and we had a good time. Yeah. I can remember when we'd be behind it. We had a little teachers' college there, and that particular class had its first influx of men. You know, mm-hmm. didn't have that many men teachers, and as I say, they were all from Brooklyn. They were so funny. Everyone was a born Milton Berle, Danny Kaye.
Yeah.
They really were. Lunchtime was delight. All extemporaneous. It was magnificent. But we could tell sometimes when one of the boys came in, he didn't. They used to carry their lunch.
Mm-hmm.
We could tell when someone didn't have lunch.
Mm-hmm.
That meant there wasn't enough money for it. And you learn to share, and you learn to help out, or... We ran a little counter with just ice cream and candy and so forth. And sometimes, you know, they'd slip you a nickel and you'd slip it back
mm-hmm.
if it didn't matter.
Yeah.
But it was a good
sharing
time.
It
was
a sharing.
Yes, but at, there was a joy in the friendship and the things that we could do, and the basketball games were fun, and there'd be a dance afterwards. What we did was not so great, and it wasn't dating, as you probably knew. In other words, it wasn't a fellow asking a girl out. Just couldn't be.
It has reversed completely back to that now with the kids in college.
Well, it's entirely possible, but...
If someone's having a party, six girls will go and...
That's right. The only dating that I did in that era was the period of time when I... And